You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome to this week's episode of the Van Flip Podcast. This week, I'm joined by Jason Evans of Manchester, England. I don't know, would you call it deathcore, brutal death metal, heavy...
Death metal, man.
Heavy band all around. It's very hard to classify, honestly. I think about... because you guys produce so much material, it seems like. You know, you guys are just constantly churning out albums in a shorter period of time than normal bands would. But that being said, when I listened to it, I was thinking, I was like, what would I classify it as? Because I definitely thought of it as death metal originally. But yeah, as time has gone on, not just with your band, but other bands in general, it's like a lot more core, like heavier breakdowns, or, you know, like deathcore type breakdowns have been introduced in other genres and stuff. So like the last album you guys had, that was, I could hear that then. And then in the new song, you guys, Paragon, I can't remember the whole thing, but the new Paragon song, yeah, it was kind of similar to that. So that was like my main question I was going to ask you first right off the bat, was like, what would you consider it? I mean, I know that you want to consider it death metal, and that's totally cool, because it's a cooler vibe to some people than deathcore, because it gets a bad rap. But deathcore is on a big swing up, you know, these days. So it's not as bad as like 2015.
Well, the way I see it is, like, it's... I think, depending on what song or what album you're listening to by Ingested, that completely changes what genre of death metal you would say it is. Because some of our songs are more brutal death metal, some of our songs are more deathcore, some of them are more slammy, some of them are a little bit more old school, some of them have some techie speedy riffs in them. Like, some of them are a bit more melodic, some of them are more atmospheric. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, because we listen to so many different types of heavy music, that, like, that influences and shapes how we would write a song or construct a song. Because it just depends on whatever we're listening to or whatever we're into at the time. So I think the thing is, like, all of our songs have different elements of different stuff. Some songs might have elements of all of that stuff in. Some of them might have one or two. But I feel like you can always tell that it's Ingested, even if we're like straddling like the fences or blurring the lines in between genres of like extreme death metal or whatever you'd want to call it. I think it all still sounds like, you hear it and you go, oh, that's Ingested, like, straight away. So like, if I was gonna like classify all of it, like what is Ingested, if I had to put a label on it, I'd probably say it's like modern death metal.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Or
a bad,
you know what I mean? Because it's got elements of all of these, because death metal's such a big umbrella, isn't it?
Right.
You know what I mean? So you've got death metal, which is the big umbrella, and then under it, you've got things like deathcore, brutal death metal, tech death metal, slam death metal, like, do you know what I mean? Gore death metal, old school death metal, like, all that kind of shit. And then it's like, I think we do all of those things, but we do it, we've done it in a modern way. Like, we haven't, it doesn't sound... I don't think it sounds dated. I think it sounds fresh. So I would call it modern death metal, because it encompasses all of these different genres.
Yeah.
In various ways, like in various songs or albums. Like, some albums might be more brutal, some might be a bit more atmospheric. Do you know what I mean?
Right, of course.
It all comes under what I would call modern death metal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that, you know, death metal and these days are, like you said, there's a big umbrella, and you can get more pretentious the deeper you go, you know, down the rabbit hole, so to speak, if you wanted to be tech grind slam band, or, you know, it can get super pretentious. So I totally agree with you on that. But you also got, you started so long ago, almost 20 years ago at this point, like, you know, it's hard to not be influenced by maybe some, like, I don't want to call it gimmicky, because right now it's not that gimmicky, but earlier in the mid-2000s and early 2010s, deathcore was kind of gimmicky, you know what I mean? And it did have a very flash-in-the-pan moment, and then kind of got run under the bus a couple of times, but now it's back because it's withstand the beating and, you know, they can't be bullied anymore.
That's it, isn't it? Because, like, the thing is, when deathcore first came onto the scene, because I remember it, you remember it, like, we were all there, it was new. It was a new thing. Like, and obviously, like, you're always going to get pushback when something new happens and it's popular. Like, everybody, like, all the people, like, the purists or elitists or whatever you want to call them.
There's none of those in death metal or metal in general, Jason. I don't know why you said that.
Yeah, of course there isn't. fucking hell. I think a trip through some YouTube comment sections on some ingested videos would show you proof of the contrary to that.
We don't even have to go that far, I'm sure. We can go right on the lamb goat and see some comments on some articles probably that will make you chuckle or, you know, make you think about something in a different light. But yeah, they'll definitely let you know. The people in the metal world and hardcore world, extreme metal, extreme music world will let you know. They have an opinion and they want you to know it.
Oh, yeah, I know. Fucking hell. I know about that. Jesus Christ. Like, but yeah, like what I'm saying is, like, it was new. It was new. So you're always going to get pushback. You're always going to get people crying about it and whinging about it and moaning about it and saying it's shit and it's lame and it sucks and all this shit. But then what's happened is, like, what are we now? Nearly 15 years later?
Yeah. The lines,
like,
are so blurred.
Almost 20 years later. Like, when was it? Like 2006 when the deathcore thing kicked off around?
I mean, you could probably...
Around there,
you could probably tie it back even earlier than that. But
probably.
More bands started, you know, coming out. Like, Job for a Cowboy times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but it's like now we're here almost 20 years later. And it's just another genre now.
Yeah, all those bands that broke up, that were deathcore bands are... coming right back right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're all getting back together now, aren't they?
Yeah. Their kids have grown up, gone to college, and they're like, fuck it, dude.
They all fucking quit when times got hard, and it was like, oh, nobody likes it anymore, and then they all fucking quit, right? And now, oh, deathcore's popular again, Lorna Shore are doing well, let's all come back.
Yeah.
And who's been here in the meantime? Fucking plugging away for 18 years. These fucking dickheads in Manchester.
You're death metal, though. It's not deathcore. You're death metal, man. You're brutal death metal. So don't even succumb to that. And no hate to Lorna Shore,
obviously. We were in and out of each scene, weren't we, I guess?
Well, that's good, though. You can, like, you know, covertly kind of submerge yourself into little pockets without really exploiting your true identity. So that's a good idea, you know? Just be able to be like water, just... form or whatever,
just,
you know?
Flowing
into
all the orifices.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, is Lorna Shore to not blame, because obviously they've really pushed the genre into a lot of more like, you know, people's faces in general, and they've really been like a champion for deathcore for the most part. But like, yeah, I mean, geez, before them, I can't really put a finger on like a really like blow me away deathcore band that was in the last couple of years, you know?
I mean, there's been really...
No offense to anybody else that's been plugging away at the deathcore situation.
Of course. But there's always been really good deathcore bands.
Yeah.
Even when deathcore fell out of favor and it just became another genre. Like, there was always good deathcore bands. But then, obviously, the rise of Lorna Shore is like... It's like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah, it's really a different trajectory.
Like, it's a completely different ball game. Like, they are killing it. And it's amazing. And but what's happened is, what's the saying? A high tide raises all ships.
That's true.
So that's what's happened. So now you've got all these people who are like new to deathcore and death metal and stuff like that. And they've got into it through Lorna Shore. And then they're going, oh, well, what else is out there? And then it trickles down to all the other bands.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody benefits. The scene benefits. Like, the industry benefits. And then what happens is you get more and more bands coming out because they're getting more and more kids are getting influenced, and then it just creates a healthy scene. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing.
I got another question for you, since you're a United Kingdom resident. There's another band that's wildly popular from your area of the world that I don't know what my feelings are on them per se. I don't listen to them. I know that everything in this world has its place, and I look at these certain bands as like entry point bands, you know, like you were just saying, like probably a lot of people didn't see or didn't hear Lorna Shore on like audio first. They, you know, they've played so many large festivals, especially in Europe and stuff like that, that I'm sure most of their audience that they've been like introduced to is through their live shows.
Hey, what's up? It's Lurk. Looks like you're enjoying the podcast. If you are and you like what we're doing here on The Van Flip, why don't you go ahead and pause this and give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. If you want to find out any information on your favorite bands from the hardcore and metal scene, visit lambgoat.com. And to stay in the loop about everything that we post on lambgoat.com, make sure you like us on Facebook and you head over to Twitter and Instagram and follow us at lambgoat. Are you a full-grown adult and you also have a TikTok account? Congrats. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can find us under the username lambgoat.com. That's spelled out D-O-T-C-O-M. Head over to our YouTube channel where we have all of these podcasts in video format, plus a lot more content that you should check out. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and you hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new content. And last but not least, if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. And as always, if you need any of the links that pertain to the artists on the show today, Lambgoat, or myself, you can always find them in the description. Thanks for listening to this message. Now let's get back to the show.
So, I don't see the casual fan just or the casual metal listener just looking at Lorna or listening to Lorna Shore. It's probably something that they've got won over at a show, which is you know, going to happen when you see them. But you know, those people will trickle down and, like you said, find other bands that are similar or heavy. You know, they may not have experienced something that heavy. So there's a masked band from the UK that I kind of have this like weird, you know, idea of like how that was either put together or, you know, I don't know if it was a put together situation. I'm not going to name names, but you probably know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
And it's kind of like a horny version of Imagine Dragons if they were angry, you know?
And that's a really funny description. I actually love this band.
Yeah.
I've liked, like, when did they bring the first EP out? It was like 6 years ago.
Yeah, I think the first album was like 21, not 01.
Yeah. It was 6 years ago, the first EP. And our guitarist Sean just came across it and he played it for me in his car, and I was like, this is fucking amazing. This is awesome. So like, I've been a fan like since
Jump Street,
the very beginning. So like, I'm
well, you've probably been around it. You've been immersed in it a little longer because you probably found out about it early on before the rest of the world did, because they're from, you know, you're part of the part of the world. But like, you know, I didn't get a whiff of them until like the pandemic. And there's bands like that. There's other bands out there that kind of follow in the same, you know, whatever. And one thing that I kind of have not an issue with, but like it rubs me the wrong way, is when a band comes out with like some heavy songs or like an idea of like, oh, this is going to be a heavy band. And then the rest of the album comes out and you're like, okay, those were the heavy songs. The rest, nine of these are just like kind of like weird filler that don't really have a place, you know. Not saying, and I haven't listened to any of those recent albums from the band we're talking about, because it just, you know, I start thinking, like, I get annoyed by it, and I know that it's got its place, and my hope is that because all those fans aren't, I'm not going to say that, I would probably say half of the fans that are that band's fans aren't fans of heavy music, so, and even maybe more so than that, who knows. My hope is that their interest in that band or bands like that will get their skin a little itchy and they have to scratch under the surface to find other bands, like you were saying with Lorna Shore, you know? And you hear about them and they're put in your face so much, almost like Taylor Swift, you know, they're like a Taylor Swift at the metal scene or whatever. And you're like, oh my God, that's like not even really what this is all. That's a one little part of it, but there's so much more.
I think that's more of a problem with the scene in the UK.
Mm.
It's something that you see very, very often. With the like things being shoved in your face all the time. Mm. So it's like in the UK scene, obviously it's a small country, isn't it? Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, if any like alternative or remotely metal band from the UK like gets a whiff, yeah, of any kind of like success or anything, it's like the UK press just goes into fucking overdrive,
hmm,
and will just relentlessly shove it down your throat, like over and over again. And it's like, I think that's an inherent problem in the UK industry, in the UK scene, is that they seem to, they'll pick whatever is the flavor of the month or the flavor of that era or time or whatever. And then all the eggs go into that basket. And then no other band in the UK at any level below that gets anything. Like, yeah, it's crazy. It's mad. It's just like you don't get no press, you don't get no interviews, you don't get no nothing, because it's like they go, oh, this band's popular, that's going to get clicks, that's going to sell magazines, so fuck everybody else. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like they don't give a shit about the scene. It's just all about what quick thing can we do to get traction, so we'll just go into hyperdrive on this band that's popular at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think it's a detriment to the UK scene, because I think the potential for heavy music in the UK is stratospheric. There are so many good bands, but none of them get any push from the industry in our own country.
Now I'm thinking,
wild, like, it could be so much better, because everybody could eat. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And these bands could get so much more popular. They could do so much better. But nobody gives them a chance because they don't give a fuck about anything apart from just a bit of traction. That's it.
Hey, well, you know, if they could sell a couple ads or a couple magazines off the rack, exactly, maybe they would get some shine, Jason. Okay, maybe that's their fault. You know, maybe the system isn't broke. No, I'm kidding. It definitely is.
The system's fucked, brother.
We've been. We deal with that on a daily basis too. It's like, there's bands that we know that if we were to cover, because we don't cover a lot of like super big bands, right? There's no point. They're not underground. Now, if they've like, if we've covered them for 20 years and then they just, you know, Lamb of God, right? Lamb of God,
yeah,
we covered them from basically the inception. Now they're like one of the biggest fucking metal bands in America, or, you know, whatever, touring bands. So of course we're still going to cover them and whatever tours they're on or whatnot. But like, same with Slipknot or whatever, but you know, we're not covering like Disturbed or Five Finger Death Punch, because you know, they don't need help. But let's say on the other hand we do cover them, we're going to get way more, not only clicks and visitors to the site, right? We're going to get way more ad revenue, because that's how that works. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
no offense, but bands like bands like yours and other bands that we cover, the advertisers have no idea what the fuck that is, right? And so tie that in with, like, you know, the cool content that Lamb Goat has on there. Advertisers kind of, like, you know, don't really want to hang out and advertise that often on stuff
that. So I get that.
It's a mix.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. There needs to be a balance.
Mm. And that's the thing. Like, we focus on the underground. Like, that's the whole thing. And it's a hard juggle sometimes to... Yeah. You know, keep the bills paid and also like make sure like this band with 100 listeners on Spotify can get its, you know, get out there and whatnot. And, you know, it's a passion project for sure for all of us, you know, that are here. And it's like a fine line to walk, but you know, we'll post about a band and then people will say like, oh, this band paid to get coverage. I was like, dude, if we did that, we would be making way more money, you know?
There'd be a lot more bands getting posted. Yeah.
You would be like, who are all these bands? But no, that's definitely not the case. But, I mean, there is still that payola thing, you know, where people pay to be on stream playlists and, you know, placements and stuff like that. So that still goes on. And, you know, I think people don't realize it still goes on in, like, our small world, too. It's not just, like, big bands or big artists. So that still is a thing. Oh man, okay, about that, let's talk about the new song and the tour coming up, Jason.
Okay.
New album, new tour, it's a whole thing. And I mean, like I said, you guys didn't you guys didn't wait too long. You had an album about a year and a half ago already. Or no, it's 24. Yeah. So yeah, 2 years ago almost. But
yeah, November 22.
Yeah.
The last one came out.
I was trying to look. You guys didn't put out a full length for a couple of years. Because you started in like early 2000, 06, 05 or something like that. But when was the first full length?
Yeah, so we started in 2006 and we released a split EP called the Northwest Slam Fest with Castrated and Crepitation, which are two other UK like slam brutal death metal bands. And that was our first ever recorded release, that. And it was just four tracks, and then the other bands did four tracks as well. And I think there was 500 copies made, like, ever. And that came out in 2007, so that was a year after we started. And then we, after that, we got signed to Siege of Amida Records.
Mm.
And then we recorded our debut album, Surpassing the Boundaries of Human Suffering. I think we recorded that in 2008.
Nine.
And then that was released in 2009.
Oh, okay. I recorded it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, because I was trying to see like how many, because lately, in the last couple of years, it's been every 2 years. You guys have been just like churning them out. But, you know, from like 2009 to 2011, then there's a gap that you have for a couple of years, and the Architect of Extinction comes out when you are on Century.
Yeah.
You guys bounced around a couple of different labels. Is that just because you had to find the right home and you found the right home eventually?
Basically. So we started off on Siege of Amida, did our debut, and then our second album, Surruption, on there. And then Siege of Amida got bought or subsidized into Century Media, and then we got taken on by Century Media. And then we did our third album, The Architect of Extinction, on Century Media. And after that album, we weren't happy. We weren't happy being on that label. We didn't think they gave us the support that we
just kind of like
we wanted or needed at the time. Like
just weren't a focus for you guys, or they weren't a focus
it was great at first, and then I think they got bought by Sony or something, or some other big company.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I can't remember which one. And then we got a new A&R manager, and they didn't really seem to give a shit about us. And then the album came out, but it was only released in the UK and Europe, and it didn't even get an American release.
Mm.
So we were just like, this fucking blows, man. Why are we here? So we contacted them and asked them for our release. We just said, we're not happy, and we'd like to be released from our contract. And they were like, yeah, fine. So we left, and then we shopped around for a bit, and that's how we ended up on Unique Leader Records for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And then we released a load of albums on there, did really well, and then it got to a point where we loved being on Unique Leader. It was always good. But we felt like we got to a point where we were like pressed against the glass ceiling.
Oh, I mean, like you grew too big for that label or whatever?
Yeah and no. Like, it just felt like where we wanted to go, we would have to move somewhere else to achieve what we wanted to achieve.
Like out of the country or just mentally?
No, just label-wise.
Oh, okay.
We fulfilled our contract with Unique Leader, left on good terms, and then we shopped around for a label.
Mm.
And then we got contacted by Metal Blade Records, who said that they heard we were free agents and would we like to talk? And we were like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Because Metal Blade's one of... We always had like a few labels that we always wanted. We were like, yo, these are the fucking labels. Like, and Metal Blade was always at the top of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like... Ingested, Goo Goo Dolls. I mean, that's like the Rushmore. That's a joke. I'm a joke. I mean, it isn't a joke. They were on the label, obviously, but you know, that's fucking. You gotta have everyone's got a Nickelback. You know what I mean, on the roster.
Yeah, but we were like, "Fuck yeah, let's go!" So then we signed to Metal Blade, released a first single. Like, we just released a standalone single because we just wanted to get some out. So we released Rebirth. And then we started work on Ashes Lie Still. And then we recorded that, released it in November 2022. And then in December 2022, literally 4 weeks later, we went into the recording studio and recorded The Tide of Death and Fractured Dreams, which is out on April the 4th.
Yes.
Get your pre-orders in now.
Yeah, you can check out Paragon of Purity, the latest single by the Manchester Death Slam Brutal Core band Ingested. With Metal Blade, did you never like submit your stuff to Metal Blade in the entire like time that you, well, I guess I don't know how often you had the option to like shop around for record labels, obviously, because you are already, you had a home for, or you had homes throughout the career, but like,
yeah. Bart, who works at Metal Blade, we've known him for years and years and years. Because we did our first European tour with him in 2010 when he used to play bass for Black Dahlia Murder.
Mm.
So we'd known him for ages, and he was the person who contacted us. So we already knew about the band and knew what we sounded like.
Nice. He was just waiting.
Yeah, so he was like, let's talk. And we were like, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just kind of... It was great because we knew him. Do you know what I mean? And, like, everything he said, we liked. Everything we told him that we wanted to achieve and what our goals and aims are, he was like, hell yeah. So
it's different than having like
aligned.
Yeah. It's different than having like some Sony A&R guy that has no idea about any kind of heavy music.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing as well. It's like Metal Blade's like a proper independent label.
Oh, they're huge. I mean, they're huge for an independent label. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like still like a proper independent label. It's like they do it because, like, obviously it's a business, but like you can tell, like, when you work with them and when you talk with them, it's like they give a shit, like, yeah. You know what I mean, they care. Like, whereas with other labels, it's like sometimes it's a bit too obviously about the bottom line,
yeah,
and rather there's not a lot... really giving a shit about like what you want to build, like, do you know what I mean?
Because yeah, it's like
not all bands can just explode. Do you know what I mean? Like, other bands have to fucking put the time in
and grind it out, like,
your bollocks off.
Yeah, grind it the hell out.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But hey, you know what? If you guys grind it out enough, maybe one day Brian will fly you out to Vegas and you can go to the Super Bowl too with Kerry King and everybody
That'd
else.
Be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool, dude. It is wild.
That'd be cool. You'd have to explain to me what the fucking rules of American Hand Egg are, though, because I don't understand why you keep stopping. I just don't get it.
In American,
I don't understand, like, the rules. Why does it stop?
American football?
They pick the ball up with the hands and then they run a bit and then they stop.
TV
and
advertising.
Everything resets. It's mad.
It's TV advertising, dog. TV
football,
advertising.
Play normal football.
It's 15 minutes.
45 minutes.
I think it's 15 minutes of actual play throughout an entire game.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's wild.
That's insane. That would drive me mental. I can't.
Whereas, but you know, and that's the thing too. Like, I grew up the city I live in North Florida, Jacksonville. I was like a 10-year-old boy when we got an NFL team, and that's the only sports team we ever had, or we've gotten, like, professional sports team that we've ever gotten here in town. And you know, that became like my life for like a decade plus, almost two decades. Now, a little more backstory on it: the Jacksonville Jaguars. Have kind of been like the laughing stock for a long period of time of the NFL. We had our shine in the very beginning, and then it was just like to the gulag with you for 20 years. And it was rough to be a supporter of that team, which much I'm sure a lot of like European and UK people understand with like their crappy neighborhood soccer football club. You know what I mean? I understand, you know, and you live that life of like, we would have probably been like relegated many times. The Jaguars probably should have been relegated to college football or something. Who knows? But that being said, the lack of play, after a while, when I started getting older, I started becoming a really big fan of baseball. And, you know, I love that. That somehow surpassed my love for football, because exactly what you're saying. It's like, hurry up and wait. It's a lot of hurry up and wait with the NFL, dude.
Yeah, it drives me mad, because it's like, At least with like football, like I'm gonna call it football. I refuse to call it soccer. It's football.
Footy ball,
right?
Because
it's a ball game played with the feet, right? And exclusively the feet.
We also kick the ball with the foot, though.
Yeah, but what, you don't, you barely even pick it up with your hands. Like, it's on, you're usually stopping.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Should we call American stop ball? That's what it should be called.
Yeah, it's not.
But, like, anyway, with football, it's 90 minutes for a full game. So you got 45 minutes on each half. And it's like the only time it will stop is if there's a foul or the ball goes out of play or a goal.
Yeah, but then you go right back to it.
And then you're going right back into it, like straight away. And what you'll get at the end of that half is you'll get what's called stoppage time.
Yeah, where they just make up a amount.
So it's all like, oh well, we reckon it's been about 3 minutes, like, and you'll just get an extra 3 minutes.
No one will know, right? Like I've never been to a proper.
It's like the time in between the Royal Rumble entrance. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, they always say it's 90 seconds, but it's fucking not.
Yeah,
it's when fucking Rikishi rubs his ass in someone's face, and then they're like, "Kane, it's your turn."
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not 90 seconds.
Yeah, it's like you could be on your way to score a goal, and boop, that's game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if the ball's like in play, they'll usually let the play happen, if you know what I mean. So say if someone's making a run, like with the ball towards a goal or whatever, and like there's a play going on, they'll let that happen. And then as soon as like the action stops, then they'll blow the whistle and that'll be the end.
Yeah, you can tell I have very little knowledge about that game. I played it I played it when I was like, 7 years old, like all kids do, just run around kicking the ball.
Yeah.
But that's about it. That's all my soccer knowledge is from right then and there. I mean, UK is pretty much, they're big cricket fans. Do you watch cricket? It's kind of like
European
baseball or something, you know?
Nah, I don't like cricket. I don't like the only sports I really like are like boxing and MMA. Like, so I watch that. I know wrestling's not, pro wrestling isn't like a sport per se, right? But I love wrestling as well.
Yeah.
And I'll watch football if it's like a big game. But American I'm not massively into football. Like,
soccer football or American football?
Real football.
Okay, you keep saying real, like,
yeah, it's real football.
Whatever.
Like, I refuse to say soccer. It's not soccer.
Hey, look, just because the entire rest of the world calls it football doesn't mean that we're gonna fucking call it football over here. We do everything differently. Okay. We lost that drunken accent you guys have. It's all good, dude. We're gonna, put all that tea in. Put all that tea in the bay that one time. Showed you guys real good.
That's why we left, really, because we were just like, as soon as you decided to make
no tea and crumpets
a massive cup of tea without a cup, we were just like barbarians, and then we left.
But luckily, this was in the area where you sent your worst criminals. You sent those, you sent those guys down under.
Yeah, they all went to Australia. not all of them. Like, most of them are still here in Manchester, but like we sent a lot of them to Australia.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have been all over the world technically with the ships, doing cool things all over the world.
Cool things. Doing cool things. The way I see it is like
spreading good cheer.
If you look back through British history, we got our asses kicked by fucking everyone in like Europe. They all conquered us, all of them, at one point or another. And then I think we were just like, just learnt from it. And then we were just like, oh, this is what everyone does, is it? And then we just went out and conquered everything.
Just not
and then
in
everyone
Europe.
Shout, and then everybody became, the world became civilized, and then everyone shouted at us, and we were like, all right, you can have it back.
That's horrible.
It's Hong Kong, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, then we learnt the errors of our ways.
But did we all, who knows?
Who knows, really?
Who knows? I think history repeats itself as a saying because it's fucking a repetitive situation, But speaking of the weird accents and the lack of us having one, I heard somewhere, and this could be like just bullshit, obviously, because it's on the internet, but I heard that the reason why Australians have that kind of dialect and accent is because not only were they just like, former English people, but they also like were just given a bunch of rum all the time, and they were just drinking rum all the time. So it was like a drunken accent, which has turned into like the native dialect of that area.
It's very possible.
Yeah,
it's very possible, because like if you think about the time when it happened, it would have been like, oh, when was it? Well, it would have been, if we're sending like British criminals over, those would have been people from like the lower working class.
Yeah.
So they would have had, regardless of where they were from in the UK.
Yeah, I don't think the royal family's getting shipped down there if they did anything
wrong. No, I know. But I mean, like, it's like, regardless of where you are in the UK, even though all the accents are like totally fucking different.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell where it's a common accent. Do you know what I mean? Because these people who are posh who live in Manchester, and they don't sound like me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but they're from the same place, or they're from like a nice place in Manchester, but they're from the same area, but they don't fucking talk like me. But like, so you have like your common accents, and then I guess if all the people who are fucking being sent down there are the commoners, like the criminals, like, and then what else are they gonna do? They're just going to keep them pissed, aren't they? They're going to keep them shit-faced.
Yeah.
To stop them from fucking causing a load of trouble. Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess it makes sense. You just end up with a sloppy English accent. Jack Sparrows down there, don't you? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's exactly what's going on. You got just a couple hundred years of Jack Sparrows, and then next thing you know, it's like, good day, mate. You know? Yeah, I can see
it's
you.
Lovely. It's lovely, Australia. You know, we went there last year, and it was awesome. Like, I was well scared because, like, I don't like those big, like, huntsman spiders that they have.
Oh, I'm going to be worried about that.
And I was, like, shitting it for the whole week. I was, like, shitting it because I was, like, if I see one of them, like, I'm fucking done.
But yeah, those things are huge.
I managed to get away with it.
Those things are pretty huge. If I ever saw one in real life, I'd probably be like, that's a fucking alien or something. You know what I mean?
Nah. Fuck that shit. It's awful.
I've never been to Australia, and the thing that kind of, you know, keeps me away is the 24-hour flight. So,
dude, you know,
I'm not into that.
It was brutal.
I hate flying anyway. You know what I mean? I'm flying tomorrow to Canada, and it's like a 3-hour, 4-hour flight. I'm like, oh my god, dude.
That's not too bad.
No, but just being, I don't like being 36,000 feet in the air and not being in control of anything.
Yeah, I just don't like being trapped for such a long period of time.
Yeah,
because I have like quite a low attention span. Like, so I'll get like, if I'm stuck in a place, I feel trapped, and like, I don't know, like I start like
getting bored.
Getting bored, and I'll start freaking out like in my own head. I'm like, I can't get out. I can't, like, there's nothing to do. I can't move.
Mm-hmm.
There's nowhere. I can't go for a walk anywhere. There's like nothing to do.
You got to get on one of those planes that has like a double decker with a bar up there or something like that.
That'd be amazing.
But even then, I'd be worried about it.
Maybe if I sell a million. Maybe if a modern death metal becomes really, really popular in the next year or so.
You never know.
And I sell a million copies of this new album, maybe I can.
Yeah, maybe. being on a plane like that would be like insane to me, because I would just be thinking about like, God, this thing weighs like X amount of pounds, and we're so high in the air. What the hell are we doing? That's where my mind goes when I'm like on the plane, you know?
Just, I try not to think about that.
Yeah, good luck. I think about it all the time. I think about that scene in Lost. You ever see Lost, that show on whatever, like the decade
not really.
Plus ago?
I think I watched like the first season when it came out.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on here.
No one knows what's going on, Jason. No one knew what was going on. Trust me. Every week I would tune in going like, are they going to explain the smoke monster or what the fuck's going on here? They still haven't talked about that. But there's a scene in there when that show starts off and like the tail rips off and, you know, the plane tail rips off. And like, that replays in my head repetitively while I'm on the plane.
Like Final Destination.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. So, let's get back. Cause we got derailed, which is fine. I love that. But I do want to bring up some of the stuff about the new album. Cause we did bring that up previously. You got some cameos on here from the from some new bands and some older bands that are coming back. You have Josh Middleton from Psilosis, formerly of The Architects, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you have Mark Hunter from Chimera. Yes. Oh, yeah. So let's talk about how you guys like linked up. I mean, I can understand how you linked up with Josh. He's not, he's probably like lives down the road from you guys. But like, how did you guys get in touch with like Chimera and how'd that work out and everything?
Well, me and Sean have always been like massive Chimera fans since we were kids. And like me and Sean, like even to this day, like will vehemently argue with anyone that The Impossibility of Reason is one of the best metal albums ever written.
Is that like, the red cover one?
Yeah, the white one. with the red star with the Chimera logo. Like that album, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good. Like it's so good. So we've always been like huge, huge Chimera fans. Like the reason Sean plays the guitar that he plays, what is it? The ESP M1000 or whatever. It's because of Rob Arnold. Because Rob Arnold plays a guitar like that.
Yeah.
So then he was just like, yeah, that's the best. Like, so now he's just got like 20 of the exact same guitar.
Just different paint jobs.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like some of them have even got like the same paint jobs.
Like, this one's for detuning. This one's for drop C.
Exactly. He's just like trying to collect as many M1000s as he can.
Hey, people hoard weird things. I'm not here to judge.
Yeah, he hoards a lot of things. Especially M1000s. But yeah, so like we've been huge Chimera fans like since we were kids, since the album came out. And the way that came around was Sean, I think Sean was on our Twitter account, but I kind of stay away from social media, me personally. I have an Instagram account.
It's not a bad idea.
I can't be arsed with it. Like, I just have an Instagram account and that's it. Like, so Sean was on our Twitter and he's like, Mark Hunter's just like either replied to our tweet or like tagged us in a tweet or something, like saying that he likes the new song or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And I was like, Mark Hunter from Chimera? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, holy shit. This was while we were recording this new album.
Oh, yeah. So,
and we were like, what the fuck? That's mad. And then, so Sean, like, just messaged him, like, saying, oh, thanks, dude. Like, we're massive fans. Like, thanks a lot. That means the world. And he's like, oh, yeah, no problem, man. Love it. Like, and then we were, like, recording one of the songs, and we were just like, this song would be pretty good with Mark Hunter on it, you know?
Like, with that idea fresh in your head.
We were thinking about it, and we were like, oh, actually, this song could be pretty good. And then we were just like, should we ask him? Like, what's the worst he can say? No.
Hey,
like,
do you know what I mean? Yeah, of course. The worst thing you can do is not ask. Everything in this world that's probably something that you've liked or that you've wondered how it happened. People ask me all the time, like, how'd you do this, that, or the other? I go, I literally just ask. 90% of the people out there don't ask.
Yeah, exactly. So we were like, well, we can't, like... let this opportunity pass. Like,
Excuse me, Mr. Hunter, Sean, are you available for...
hello, Mr. Mark! Like, nah, so Sean messaged him and asked him. And we were like, you know, we've got a song that would be perfect for you. Like, if you're down for it, like... And he was like, fuck yeah. Like, send me the track over. Tell me which bits you want me to do. And so we figured it out that night, sent him the track. And then a few days later, he sent us the song back with his vocals and it was sick. And we were just like, this is fucking mad.
Yeah.
And yeah, it blew our minds because it's like having someone that's like such a big influence, like on your career, like especially like where we started from, and like me as a vocalist as well. Like he was a huge influence on me, like growing up. I listened to that album all the time. Like that's one of the albums that I practice doing vocals to when I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
And it was like that's kind of shaped me as like a vocalist, and then to have him on our album is just nuts. It's just amazing how things like
yeah
come full circle. Like
the senpai, The senpai noticed you. That's what I think. That's what we say. No, that's cool, and it's cool that you know you were in the process of doing the album, and you got that idea turned around in such a quick time to where it can be a part of the album. Especially because I'm assuming you recorded it in the UK, and obviously Mark's in Ohio, so you know, well, the internet and everyone's got their own studio in their house basically now, so it'll help out. But what is your favorite Chimera song? I'm assuming it's Off Impossibility.
Pure Hatred.
Yeah.
Pictures in the Gold Room.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's the one that stuck out the most to me. It still sticks out over those years. It was such a badass song back then, and it's still
Dehumanizing Process.
Is that on that album?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just remember the breakdown. Down again as well.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I remember.
I like the whole album. I love it.
I'm not going to say you don't like any of the songs. You said it was your favorite, one of your favorite albums. So yeah, you have to like. You can't have a favorite album that you skip tracks on. I think.
No. So. Every track, like if it's in my top 10, I'm never skipping a track.
Yeah. If by chance,
I appreciate what. Like, it's not just the songs that I appreciate. I appreciate the album as a complete
piece of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I like the ebbs and flows of the way that an album goes from its start, middle point, and the end of it. To me, that all matters. Like, it matters a lot.
As
like,
it should.
In the order that the songs are in and stuff like that, which is like, that's something that we spend ages on.
So how long does it take for you guys? So how long does it take for you guys to, because again, you guys are like in the last couple cycles, it hasn't taken long. And you know, you recorded your album a month after you fucking released your last album. Right. And like, do you write before you get in the studio? Or do you write in the studio? And then the reason why I was asking this question is, oh fuck. What were you just saying before I interrupted you?
I was saying like, we spend ages.
The flow of the song.
The flow of the album.
So yeah. Explain to me like how you guys do that in such a short amount of time recently, because if it seems like it would be more of a task. And I mean, I'm sure there's songs that you're like, this one doesn't fit on the, it doesn't flow right. And do you change it to where it flows, or do you just kind of leave it off and maybe that's an EP song or a B-side or something?
Well, what we do is we constantly write. So as soon as we'd finished writing Ashes Lie Still, like that, just the writing process, this was months and months before we went into the studio to record it. As soon as we'd finished writing it, and we were like, right, we've demoed it, like we've got an idea of what the album's going to sound like we start writing the next one like straight away. So we're just constantly writing all the time. So Sean is just a riff machine. Like that's what he does. Like all week he's just writing riffs all the time, writing riffs, like putting songs together, and then he'll send them to Lynn. Then Lynn will write his drums to it, and then he'll send, and then they'll like go back and forth, like if they need to change any bits. And then once that song's happy with where them two are happy with it, then they'll send it to me. Or Sean might write vocals for it, because me and Sean write about 50% of the lyrics each.
Okay.
So if Sean's feeling it and he's got an idea of what he wants to do with it, he'll just say, oh, I've got an idea for this one, I'll do that one. And then he'll send me a different one. And then either myself or Sean will write lyrics and vocal patterns to it, demo that. And then between the three of us, we'll then go back and forth and say like, oh, well, this vocal's changed my idea for this bit now. Mm. So now we've changed this riff or this drum beat, or maybe we'll put like a different section in here. Or you know what I mean, and then we'll just change the song around until we're happy with it, and then eventually we'll have. Because I mean, oh my god, we had an entire alphabet's worth of songs, like going into recording these two albums. We had songs that were song A, song B, song C, song D, all the way from A to Z. like, because we just had shitloads of songs because we're just writing all the time.
And then what, you got a handful that go on Ashes, and then now you have a
so
handful
then,
that are going
what
on this
we
one?
Do. Yeah, so then what we did was we were like, right, well, these songs were all kind of written together around the same time. Do these songs work together? And then we'll then like craft an album from the songs that we think work as a cohesive album. It might not be like, oh, these are all the best songs, so these must all go on this album. Like, it's like, we like all the songs, we believe in all the music, but what works as a cohesive album?
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what has the best flow? How would this work? Let's move this around. Like, how does that sound? Like, what's the story of the album? Do you know what I mean? Like, sonically, what story are we trying to tell here?
Yeah, and how much of that is based on Warhammer? If any of it is, I had to ask. I think you're wearing, I think that's a Warhammer shirt. Am I not
that
wrong?
That is a Warhammer t-shirt. Yeah, like I'm fucking obsessed with Warhammer. Like,
so I'm sure some of that has entered into the lyrics of some of the songs. No.
Yeah. Like definitely, like ideas of, like. So when we write songs, the lyrics that, like, the meanings of the songs are, they're very real. Like, so they're all about our personal experiences or thoughts or fears or dreams or hopes or things that we've personally been through in our lives. Like, that's what we write about. But we then frame it in a different light, so it's not exactly obvious what we're talking about. So we kind of keep it like vague.
Mm-hmm.
So, because a lot of this stuff is personal. Do you know what I mean? It's right. Like, I don't want to go out there and be so fucking blunt and on the nose about my fucking problems. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, but I want to get it out because it feels cathartic. And I know, and I've found, like, as the older I've got, I can't sing a song if I don't care about it.
Mm.
If I don't care about what I'm singing about. But the way that we frame these lyrics, we do it in a way that's like up for interpretation. So it's like, there's an album, there's a song on the new album called Kingdom of Sand. And the imagery that I use for that song is about a dead king sitting on a throne of sand in an empty kingdom, and his greed and ego has made him refuse to acknowledge that his entire empire has rotted around him, and all his subjects are dead, all his people are dead. They're all dust, they're all bones, but he still sits on his throne, deluded to the fact of what's actually happened. But so that's a fantastical image. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a King Joffrey type thing.
Yeah, it's like a fantastical image. It's a fantastical story, but that's about something real. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, incognitoed it. I get it.
Exactly. That's about a person I know. That's about something that.
But he's just a Warhammer character instead.
See, yes. There you go. Like, but the reason why I do that is like I like my lyrics to be up for interpretation, because I think if I just do it so on the nose about something that's personal to me, then it's only me that can connect with that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I leave it vague and up for interpretation, where it's like you can see what the point of the song is, like maybe if somebody's struggling with something, or they're going through something and they read or listen to the lyrics of a specific song and they feel that they can apply that to them or whatever situation they're in, and it might, if it even fucking helps them like just a tiny little bit, then to me, that's like such a powerful and important thing. Do you know what I mean? And that, like, I think that creates such a long lasting connection between a fan and an artist.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's like super important, because all the bands that I love, and all the songs that mean so much to me from other bands are songs that I've found or listened to, like when I've been having a hard time with something,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, oh fuck, like, you know, like bloody hell, like that makes sense, like that song, like, you know, to what I'm going through. And then I end up having like feeling like I've got this connection with that song or that band. And then I don't know. To me, that's like so massively important.
Yeah, I agree. Is there?
So that's why I use some Warhammer in.
I thought you just like to paint the little pants. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
I do. Like, I've literally got like a massive shelf just here that is just filled with
figurines,
Chaos Space Marines. Yeah. Like, they're all just there. Like, just fucking hundreds of them.
That's a game that I never really like got into my world. I know of Dungeons and Dragons from like, you know, middle school.
I fucking love Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. I play it all the time.
I don't, it's so weird. Like, I have this weird ADHD that just like the world outside of what I'm into is non-existent. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't even know what's going on in news outside of like talking with Jason today about whatever, and then posting about whatever band's putting whatever out. And that's basically like my little world for the last couple of years. And then, like, you know, I live in Florida, so like someone will be like, you know, the hurricane's coming tomorrow. And I'm like, what? I won't even know, you know, I'll be out of it. I'll be so out of it. Because I don't watch TV or anything like that. You know, I spend a lot of time just, if I'm ingesting content, it's through the computer, you know?
Nice. So, I like what you did there.
Is what it is. I have to ask, and we'll probably end it on this note, but you guys have been running for you know, almost 2 decades now.
Yeah.
You've got quite a few albums out, EPs out, stuff, you know, your streaming, if you were to add up all your streaming listeners, which again, that doesn't necessarily amount to exactly what it might look like online, but it does, you know, generate some kind of royalties or whatever. So you have a couple hundred thousand listeners scattered throughout all the platforms. Do you guys support yourself fully off of Ingested, or do you guys, or let me rephrase that, support yourself fully off of Ingested, or do you have other side projects or have other jobs that you need to do to help make the band a full-time thing?
No, this is our full-time job.
Nice.
We're not rich or well.
Yeah, no, there's no money in metal, dude. I get it. Yeah. I get it.
It's like we can pay our bills. There's a roof over my wife and kids' head. The bills are paid. There's food in their bellies. But you know, like we've had to work our fucking bollocks off for nearly 2 decades to get to this point, just where it's like, right, we can do this. We can pay ourselves each month. We can make sure our bills are paid and our families are looked after. But now it's like we just want to get to that next step where it's like they can be comfortable and don't have to worry.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like for us, it's never been about money or fame or any of that shit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, you just have to be able to, like you said, support yourself and make sure you can create the art.
Yeah. We're three working class lads. Two of us are from fucking Manchester Council Estates. One of us is from fucking Council Estate in the Welsh Valleys. Like, none of us have grown up with money. Like, I was poor as shit as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just lived on a fucking shitty council estate in fucking South Manchester. Like, fucking...
Is a council estate like government housing project type thing?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but they're like houses, so it's like they're not like big flat blocks. I mean, some of them are, but like where I was living, it's just houses.
Gotcha.
And it's like, so we've grown up knowing that everything is earned, nothing is given. Like, if you want something, you have to go out there and you have to fucking work for it. So that's what we've done. Like, we've never had any help. We've never had any handouts, or we've never had a Porsche or any shit like that. Everything we've done, we've fucking worked for it. We've fucking fought for it tooth and nail when everybody was fucking telling us that we were shit, when everyone was telling us no. You know, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. And it's like, listen, don't tell a fucking working class guy from Manchester that I can't do something, because that's the worst thing that you can fucking
do.
Because
do
now I'm going to do it out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
spite's a good driver.
Like, yeah, though, exactly. So it's like we've achieved what we've achieved in spite of everyone else. Like, so it's like we've just worked brick by brick, step by step. Every year has got better than the last. Like, we've built a fan base all over the world that's like super loyal. Do you know what I mean? We don't have any fair weather fans that just jump on us because we're the cool thing, because we've never been the cool thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like all our fans are real. Like, wow. And like, we fucking love them. Like, this is all we want at the end of this, is to be, when this is all said and done, is for us to be able to look back. And then people will go, fucking hell, Ingested. They were literally one of the best death metal bands ever.
They just never
like,
went away.
They were just one of the best. Like, one of the best. They might not have been the most popular. They might not have sold the most records. But fuck me, they were the fucking best. Like, you go and see them at a fucking live show, you'll be blown away. Like, that's the shit that I want. I want a fucking legacy.
Yeah.
I want something that, when I'm dead, my kids can go, fucking dad, look at him go. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
want, how I want old that. Are you now?
So my daughter's 9.
Okay.
And my son was 5 yesterday.
Oh, well, happy belated
Valentine's Day.
Nice. Do they kind of understand what dad does?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. My daughter came to see us when we played with, we toured with Lana Shaw.
Oh, yeah.
In the UK and Europe in November. And we played the Academy in Manchester, which was like, it was like sold out, so it must have been about 2,500 people.
Is that like a small theater or arena or something like that? We post about it a lot, so
it's big. Yeah. It's like a 2,500 cap venue.
Okay,
but it's just one big. It's like if you go in, it's just one big square room with a stage on one end. And yeah, my daughter came to see us. That was the first time that she's ever seen us live. Yes, finally. And I was like, because I said to my wife, I was like, we need to bring Scarlett to this show. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, she's got school the next day. And I was just like, it's a really big show in our hometown, and she's never seen us play. Like, I just want her to come and see it. So she came and she loved it. Like,
yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
And my son, like, he just loves metal.
Yeah, I was going to ask are they
fans? He's got an electric drum kit that he plays and stuff like that.
Oh.
And he really likes Slaughter to Prevail.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to get us some trigger bass pedals.
Well, I went to go and see Slaughter to Prevail about a month ago. And I was chatting with Alex and that, because I'd not seen him for like, for a long time. Like, I've not seen Alex for... So we were having a catch up and that, and he was asking me like, "How's the family and all that?" And I was like, "Oh, great." I was like, "Oh, my son, he loves you guys, by the way." Like, and he was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah, like, he loves you guys. Like, he listens to Baba Yaga all the time." And then a few weeks later, there's a knock at the door, and it's the postman. There's a big box, and it's addressed to my son. Mm. And I was like, oh my God. And then he opened it and it's a bloody mask.
He says the mask thing? Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, he sent him a mask. Fucking amazing.
So he hasn't taken that off yet since, right?
No. He's got that. Like, he fucking loves it. So he's wearing that shit and everything. And like, but it's just amazing. Like, but it's like shit like that, like, proper warms my heart. Do you know what I mean? It makes me proud to be in the scene that I'm in. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Where you've got like such awesome people.
That's true. One last thing, and then I'll cut you loose because we've gone over the hour. But I know I just asked you like if you guys did Ingested full time. I wanted to ask, how long did it take for that to be a thing? Like, how long did it take for you guys to just be able to support yourself? Because the reason why I ask these questions a lot is because, you know, growing up, I'm sure people also have this same kind of thought process. But growing up, I thought that, like, if you're a band on tour for some reason, regardless of level of, you know, genre or popularity or whatever, if you are a band going on tour most of the time, you probably were able to pay your bills just specifically doing the band. It wasn't until I was in a band myself and went on tour that I realized, like, oh no, I still have to pay rent back home and all other types of shit. And that's why I ask these questions about that stuff. And some bands don't like to talk about it, so I understand, you know, they want that allure, mystique or whatever. But I think a lot of people that listen to you or to this podcast or visit Lamb Goat, they also might be in bands. And I think that's something that I try to share and spread the awareness that, like, yes, the masked band that you see all over the place, they're doing very well, but that's not like, and Lorna Shore too, they're probably doing very well too nowadays, but there are also like million bands underneath them that are probably homeless, living out of their cars, living with their parents' basements, or you know, there's a lot, there's like a level of where they're at in life on the, you know, scale of success or financial stability. So, like, that's why I ask these questions, because I like to shed light on that. And, you know, I feel fans then understand that, like, oh, there's no money in that band, makes no money, but yet they still do it. And so, oh, that's, they're clearly doing it for the love. They're not doing it to make $1 million. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's genres. There's different genres that just are never going to get the same love as, like, other bigger pop, hip hop, you know, country. There's so much bigger stuff to choose from that, like, Slam ain't gonna fucking be on the radio, you know what I mean? But I also like to, you know, when I come across people that live off of the music in the scene, like, I want to, you know, put a little light on that and give a little flowers to that, because, like you said, it's a grind. So I want to know how long it took you guys to get to that point.
I think we started in 2006. Obviously at first, like, you're not like taking it seriously. You're doing it. It is like just something that you're doing with your mates.
Yeah, and your bills are probably different. Your living situation's different. Your family situation's different.
Because when we first started, we were all still living with our parents. We were all still kids pretty much. And then like as you get older and you realize that this is what you want to do, then you start trying to take it seriously. But then it's like, well, something's got to finance this. So then you've all got jobs. So then you're doing your job to finance your band, but you're struggling to play shows and do tours because you've got to work your job.
Yeah.
So then you get stuck into that cycle. So then that gets difficult. And then eventually, obviously you want to move into your own house, like, and you want to, because you've got like a missus and stuff, and then so then you need to get a more serious job, and then it's sort of like then you're trying to balance a full-time job with a band that you're trying to turn into a career.
That's where it gets a little tricky. Difficult. Yeah,
really difficult,
because you could then go down just the corporate, or not the corporate, but the work road, and then that dream band situation goes right out the window, and you blink an eye and 10 years go by.
Well, this is the thing. So like my point at that was I was working at Nando's, which is like a chicken restaurant.
I almost brought it up, but I thought that it was too English. Yeah.
Nah, I worked at Nando's, and then turns out I was really good at my job. So then I get promoted to supervisor, and then I get promoted to manager. Now, manager is a salaried job where it's like, and that's a lot of responsibility, and it's a full-time job, and it's it was decent money as well for my age. So then that makes the choice really difficult, because then it's like, well, what do I do? Do I follow my dreams, or do I just take this normal job and the money, like, and then just live a normal life? But then it's like, then I'm always going to be wondering what if, and then I'm always going to regret it because this is my fucking dream. So, so then I quit that job, and then I went and did the Summer Slaughter tour in America, because I was like, well, look, they're refusing to give me the time off. I'd balanced it for as far as I could balance it.
Right.
And then to the point where it was like, right, you got to shit or you got to get off the pot. Like, do you know what I mean?
I'm wiping right now. I'm wiping and getting off.
Yeah, so I was like, right, peace. So I fucked off from Nando's and then went full time. And then, And that was that. So I think we went full time. I think it was after that was proper full time. So then it was, that was around 2018, I think.
Okay, cool.
And then when we realized that we could actually turn this into a proper career, was around 2020, I want to say.
Okay.
When we were like, right, okay. And then what we did was we have a team of accountants
mm-hmm.
that work with us. And now what basically they've put a system in place where instead of just willy-nilly, oh, let's just split the money, like, you know, whatever's left over after a tour, it now goes into a business, and then we now get paid a monthly wage.
Nice.
So that it's all like structured, and it's like way more, it's a lot better for us, like paying our bills and stuff like that, because it's like a regular income, and it's like, it's not just, here's a lump sum of money.
Right, yeah, it's something to make it last. Yeah,
like, you do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's like a proper
paycheck,
like a proper paycheck every yeah, month. Yeah. Like, which is like, it's not like fucking, like I said, it's not fucking loads. It's just, it's enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not living the fucking life of Ryan.
You're not flying out to the Super Bowl. That's
exactly.
Not yet, Jason. Not yet.
I've not been able to go to WrestleMania yet. Let's put it that way.
Maybe someone will hear this and they'll invite you to one. Take you as a guest or something like that. Well, Jason, I've had a great time talking to you. This is quite a refreshing podcast here. It's quite funny and a lot of laughs. A lot of these sometimes go down the serious route, you know, because it'll happen. But yeah. I enjoyed our little conversation today. And yeah, this comes out next week. So
awesome. You know,
it'll be a good time. One last thing, I guess. The Tides of Death and Fractured Dreams comes out, when is it, April
the 4th, I do believe.
Nice. And then you can tell it's got, like, you can tell it by the cool artwork. It's got,
yeah.
You guys got some really cool artwork on your albums, and I wish we would have been able to get into that, but, you know, whatever. It happens. I got stuff to do, you got stuff to do. It's okay.
Get me on again next time.
Well, we could definitely do something like that.
Have another chat.
We can definitely do, we're always looking for content, maybe not on the podcast, but all over the website. So we're open to anything and everybody. But check them out. Check Ingested out if you're in Europe, I should say, on the upcoming tour you have. It's in April, I believe, supporting that release.
Yeah.
You got what? Fallujah, Vulvodynia.
Yeah, and Melancholia. And that runs through April and May.
Yeah.
And we're doing the whole of the UK and Europe.
Are you headed back over? Are you headed back over here anytime soon? Or is that like,
we are working on it. Okay. Hopefully sometime in the fall. So just keep your peepers peeled. Yeah. We love touring America. Like, our biggest fan base is in America. So it's always amazing to get back over.
There's a lot more people out here, man.
Yeah, tell me about it.
It's a lot of people's biggest, biggest fan bases. A lot more people.
It's great. Yeah, I like, we love touring America. The shows are always awesome. So yeah, like we're looking to get out there towards the second half of the year.
Cool. So. Well, if you check out the boys, whether they're in Europe or here in America. Definitely bring your Warhammer figurines, get your trade on, maybe play some games in the backstage or whatever. I'm sure they're down for it. all right. I had a great time, Jason. Good luck on the album coming out. Obviously, we'll keep posting all the good stuff that you guys send our way. Good luck on the tour. And yeah, man, we'll chat soon.
Okay. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Peace, man. Thank you.
Hello out there. Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!